Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to Sterling and Wilson Renewable Energy Limited Q4 and FY25 earnings conference call. This conference call may contain forward-looking statements about the company, which are based on the beliefs, opinions, and expectations of the company as on date of this call. These statements are not the guarantees of future performance and involve risks and uncertainties that are difficult to predict. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing the star, then zero on your touch-tone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Sandeep Thomas Mathew, Head IR, for his opening remarks. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Yeah, good morning, everyone, and welcome to our Q4 FY25 earnings call. We have with us today Mr. C.K. Thakur, our Global CEO, Mr. Ajit Pratap Singh, our CFO, and SGA, who are our investor relations advisors. We will start today's call with the key operational highlights for the quarter and the fiscal year and industry outlook by Mr. Thakur, followed by the financial highlights by Ajit, post which we will open the floor for Q&A. Thank you, and over to you, C.K.
Good morning, everyone. Thanks, Sandeep, and a warm welcome to all the participants on this call. We are very happy to welcome our new CFO, Mr. Ajit Pratap Singh, to our team. Ajit's illustrious career spans 29-plus years, with the most recent being at Transrail Lighting Limited, wherein he served as its CFO and was instrumental in getting the company listed in India through a successful IPO. Earlier, he handled leadership roles at OPG, wherein he served as a Group CFO and Executive Director, along with leadership roles at large industrial conglomerates like JSW, Vedanta, JP, and Lohia Group. We wish him a bright and successful future with us. Let me begin with a quick update on our business operational outlook. Beginning with our order book position, we closed the full year with a total order inflow of 7,051 crore. Of the total order inflows, the domestic market contributed nearly 5,900 crore, or approximately 84% of the total order inflow in FY25, with the rest coming from the international market comprising the two South African projects we won earlier during the fiscal year. The domestic order inflow represents a healthy year-on-year growth of nearly 21% this fiscal year compared to the fiscal year 2024. In terms of order value, private IPPs contributed nearly 55% of the total domestic order inflow, while PSU contributed nearly 45%. Apart from our growing domestic solar EPC business, FY25 also marked our entry into two new important growth markets: battery energy storage solutions and wind EPC. With more and more projects in the renewable space moving towards the hybrid model, we believe a well-rounded offering like we currently provide to our customers is crucial to tap into the growth. We backed three new projects in the domestic EPC market in the fourth quarter. We received our first order for wind EPC from a private IPP for a hybrid project in Rajasthan. A scope of work includes engineering, procurement, and construction of a 69.3-megawatt wind balance of the plant and 55-megawatt AC, 75-megawatt DC solar BOS, along with 132-kV (33-kV) pooling substation. Our entry into wind helps us provide holistic EPC solutions for hybrid projects and opens up a new exciting segment for us. The company achieved L1 status for a turnkey solar project of 200-megawatt AC, 260-megawatt DC PV plant in Gujarat, India, from a leading PSU developer. The company has also received a letter of award for a PV plant in Rajasthan, India, from a domestic IPP. Looking ahead, our India order pipeline continues to remain very strong, and we expect nearly 22-23 gigawatts of orders to be bid out during this calendar year alone or in the next 6 to 9 months. Over and above, the solar EPC pipeline we will continue to target BESS project and select wind projects as well. In the international market, our efforts are becoming more focused on select projects in select geographies, including MENA and Europe, and our pipeline has also therefore become smaller to devote our resources accordingly, which has resulted in a small decline in our overall pipeline compared to December 2024. Our unexecuted order value now stands at over ₹9,096 crore and continues to provide good P&L visibility for the forthcoming quarters. Over 84% of this order book comprises domestic Indian projects, while the international UAV comprises primarily two projects each in Europe and South Africa. In terms of execution, our scale-up plans continue to remain on track, and the improved top line of Q4 is a sign of our efforts, and we are committed to address challenges of increasing non-trend based limits and achieving better open credits terms with the key suppliers. Thanks to our associates, partners, vendors and subcontractors and our internal team members for relentlessly working to achieve the Q4 top line. We continue to judiciously evaluate projects in India and overseas and are mindful of having to remain patient in order to target profitable orders. Moving to the Nigeria project, we are still awaiting final order signing and closure. Also, as has been mentioned in earlier calls, post-order signing, we expect the project to take 6 to 9 months to achieve financial closure. We'd like to reiterate that the lumpiness in order inflow is to be expected with EPC companies like ours, and timelines for achieving project's closure could vary depending on host of factors, including finalization of contractual terms, financial closures, etc. Our O&M portfolio outlook remains strong, and our portfolio stands at 8.7 gigawatt as of March 2025. As stated in the previous call, our large team of EPC projects, which are nearing completion in the next couple of quarters, will also feed a good pipeline of new projects for O&M, which should aid a meaningful pickup in revenues in these segments from second half of financial year 26. Moving to industry outlook, the Indian renewables story continues to make strong progress, and India will continue to be our single largest focus market. According to MNRE, the country's installed solar capacity reached 105.6 gigawatt as of financial year 25. Just 35% of 300 gigawatt target set for 2030. Financial year 25 witnessed a record-breaking additions of nearly 24 gigawatt in solar capacity, sharply up from 15 gigawatt in financial year 2024. This surge was largely driven by utility-scale projects, which contributed nearly 17 gigawatt and is our core focus market. Despite the record achievement, the pace still falls short of annual run rate needed to meet 2030 target. On the regulatory front, the greenhouse gases emission intensity target rules 2025 sets a specific emissions intensity threshold across industries, reinforcing India's ambition to achieve net zero by 2070. There is a substantial financial and strategic incentive for industries, especially in steel, cement, and aluminium, to transition to renewable-based electrification, which in our view can continue to drive the private IPP market and C&I space. As India integrates higher shares of intermittent solar and wind power, the importance of grid stability has grown exponentially. Battery energy storage systems are now pivotal to balancing supply and demand and ensuring a resilient grid. In a decisive move, the Ministry of Power has mandated that all upcoming solar projects include co-located solar storage systems with at least 2 hours storage capacity, equating to 10% of the installed solar capacity. This initiative aims to improve grid reliability and will be essential to integrate the anticipated 500 gigawatt renewables capacity by 2030. The sharp decline in cost of lithium and battery, bolstered by advances in technology and expanded manufacturing capacity, has also made these projects more viable. Central Electricity Authority's National Electricity Plan outlines India's scale of storage ambitions, with the market expected to grow exponentially in the next 5 years. India's wind energy sector is also seeing a revival. A noticeable shift is underway in the structure of wind tenders. Increasingly, new capacity is being awarded through firm and dispatchable renewable energy projects, which combines solar and wind components and is a market we are increasingly looking to target. While there are several positives, yet challenges remain. Competition in domestic EPC sectors has been pretty strong this fiscal, but we have continued to hold our own with patience and disciplines. Domestic manufacturing of solar modules and cells have been trailing demand, and the DCR content requirement of cells poses a risk of pricing and availability. Proposed US tariff has added another layer of complexities, especially for our suppliers, and we are closely monitoring and working with our suppliers to mitigate pricing risk to the extent possible. With a fast-growing domestic market, a strong balance sheet, we believe we are positioned to tap the growth. With this, I'll ask Ajit to take you through the consolidated financial highlights. Thank you very much.
Thank you, CKT. Thanks a lot. We are very pleased to report that the company achieved its highest quarterly revenue since listing. That's a big achievement. And our revenue has grown by around 114% year on year. That's more than doubled basically from last year. And around 37% quarter on quarter to INR 2519 crore. Primarily aided by higher execution in domestic EPC projects and the new international EPC projects. For the full year also, we have seen substantial growth, and our revenue has grown more than double by 108% year on year to INR 6302 crore. In respect of our gross margin, our consolidated Q4 gross margin was approximately 10.4%, while our full year gross margin was 10.1%. Looking at the segment-wise result, our full-year domestic EPC gross margin has trended back to our target range of 10%, while our international EPC gross margin was approximately 8% because of certain legacy projects. Our O&M margin for the full year, if you see, that was approximately 21%, and there was a write-off of around 4 crores in the last quarter. Our operational EBITDA, that is operating revenue less recurring overheads, was 158 crore this quarter. That's around 6.3% EBITDA margin, compared to approximately 90 crore in quarter 3. And that is reflective of the operational leverage achievable through improving execution pace in the company. For the full year, we have achieved an operational EBITDA of 291 crore vis-a-vis a loss of 13 crore in the last year. Reported Q4 EBITDA was 116 crore, that is 4.6% EBITDA margin. And that also got impacted by certain forex loss in the month of March 2025. For full year, reported EBITDA was 276 crore, that is growth of impressive 411% compared to the last fiscal. Quarter 4 profit before tax was 87 crore, and that's a growth of around 112% sequentially. And for full year, our EBITDA was 163 crore vis-a-vis a loss of 172 crore in the last year. Reported quarter 4 PAT was 55 crore, and that's significantly high if you see compared to the last year. There was non-cash deferred tax asset charge of 18 crore in this quarter. We have been incurring this charge since quarter 4 FY24 due to standalone profitability. The remaining deferred tax asset on the books is approximately 23 crore, and we reported full year PAT of 86 crore compared to loss of 211 crore in the previous fiscal. As CKT alluded to in his opening remarks, we have continued to make positive strides in our execution scale-up as seen in Q4 results and will continue to do the same. Now coming to balance sheet, our net debt has seen a marginal increase of 3 crore compared to last quarter and was at 178 crore at 31st March 2025. Gross debt, however, has increased. We have taken a fresh term loan from a bank for 200 crore and the disbursement was done towards end of March 25. And that has also led to higher cash balance because that loan was disbursed and was we were keeping in our books and we have not utilized as on 31st March 2025. With this, now we can open up the floor for questions and answers. Thank you.
Thank you. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on their touchtone telephone. If you wish to withdraw yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handset while asking a question. We will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. Thank you. The first question is from the line of Rohit Natarajan from Aditya Birla Sun Life. Please go ahead.
Thank you for this opportunity. My first question is more to do with the lot of projects of almost like 40 gigawatt of renewable energy is pending for PPA. So will this impact the order inflow for FY26 as such?
So the pipeline that you have indicated in my initial remarks, so the projects close to 22-23 gigawatts are slated to be bid out in Q1, Q2 that are not impacted because of the any other issues, PPA signing and other issues. The next quarter onwards it may, but in Q1, Q2 this does not have any impact on our order inflow.
If I look at the historical market share as such, would it be fair enough to say maybe we can clock out of this 22-23 gigawatt total serviceable market, maybe 30% market share, 6 gigawatt kind of inflow should be possible?
It's difficult to guide you at this stage because historically, if you see the Q1 has been witnessing the closure of the projects which has spilled over from the Q4, right? So there if you look at, out of 22 gigawatt, no new project seems to be tendered out, only those projects are there in the market. And looking at our, the hit ratios, we are hopeful of getting better shares out of, out of the projects that have been bidded out.
Got it. On the international front, the Nigeria order, we've been reading something about there are some import restrictions, local content policies, financial and currency challenges within Nigeria, and obviously this has led to a prolonged delay and all the renewable energy projects in slow track in that country as such, and there don't seem to be a near-term fix for that. Is that a cause for concern, or do you see that probably we should expect further delays in this region to get further order inflows as such?
I appreciate your concern. So there have been delays. In the country like African regions, the things move slowly. But there is no negative news as such. Even after the Trump tariff policy announcements, it's possibly getting delayed. That's it. So I can't say at this stage that the project has any negative news. Should not be a concern going forward.
So U.S. Exim is still committed to the project. This is being funded by U.S. Exim. And they are still committed for the project. So there are delays, but there is no major concern, we believe.
No, I was reading somewhere like the Nigerian government is trying to promote the local manufacturing. So if you don't have the module and panels in there, locally made, things can possibly get further delayed. Plus, obviously, you have had the Nigerian idiosyncratic issues like the currency issues, fiscal incentives not adequate enough. So is that being, I'm talking about the country-specific issues. That's the thing been lingering for a while.
No, Mr. Natarajan. So, I mean, since this is Exim funded project, right, and the supplies have to come from US and other markets, right, and therefore any local regulations on the supplies, I don't foresee that it will be deviating from the original terms and conditions of the contract, right, that we have been discussing with them.
Got it. And sir, my final question is more to do with the financial results part on the non-recurring overheads, currency fluctuations part. I understand some 15% of the order backlog we still have in international exposure. If you could give us some guidance or some color on how these non-recurring overheads will pan out in FY26, plus also the DTA impairment, how much further it is to be impaired in FY26. How will it will we get back to the normalized tax rate as such?
Sure. So, in terms of non-recurring overheads, majority of the portion is one-time write-off of bad debts and certain ECL provisions we have taken in the current quarter. In terms of forex losses, this is because the currency was very volatile in March, and these are primarily mark-to-mark translation losses. These are not the transaction loss. Because of our exposure to our other subsidiaries in Dubai. So this is basically only big book entry, not the transaction loss. And what was your second question? Sorry.
Deferred tax. Assets impairment.
Yeah. In deferred tax, as of now, we have basically this is due to the difference or the expenses which are not allowed in tax. Primarily, as of now, these are like provision for bad debts, leave encashment, gratuity, provision for gratuity and provision for bonus. And as of now, we have outstanding of amount of around 20 to 23 crore that is expected to be utilized in next year or next 1 or 2 years.
Sure, that's it from my side. Thank you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, in order to ensure that the management is able to address questions from all participants, please limit your questions to 2 per participant. The next question is from the line of Ganesh Ram Rajagopalan from Unify Capital. Please go ahead.
Thank you for taking my question. I have 2. This is just in follow-up to what Rohit had asked. The first one is on the foreign exchange loss. Could you please detail that a bit more for us? Because my understanding is that there are some hedges on the projects that you undertake, and there's some amount that you give to loans in terms of loans to subsidiaries that you do not hedge. But how come there's this this foreign exchange loss that you've incurred this quarter? And is this a cash loss or is this something that, you know, eventually if the currency stabilizes will be written back? That's the first part. The second is on the deferred tax asset, could you please help us understand, you know, in more simpler terms as to exactly what this charge is? And maybe if I think ahead next year, what could be the extent of this charge? Just these 2 questions, please.
Sure. So, in terms of forex, these are translation loss. Sorry, can you be in mute if somebody is not speaking?
Yes, I have muted. You can go ahead.
Yeah. So, the forex loss, this is only translation loss. It is not the transaction loss and it is not related to our operations. Basically, it is the exposure what we have as a standalone entity to our subsidiaries in Dubai. So the loans and advances given to them, that has been translated as on 31st March. And it's only a book entry. The moment this currency will get stabilized, this will get squared off and will come back. And on the second question on deferred tax, this has been created out of the expenses which are allowed as per Companies Act but not allowed as per taxation. And these are primarily the provisions which has been created for leave encashment, gratuity, bonus. Certain carry forward losses are also there. And this outstanding amount as of now is around 23 crore, which will be utilized in the next 1 to 2 years.
So essentially you're saying another 23 crores that will be, I mean, prorated and extended over the year. So next year if I look at FY26, maybe 12 crores or something like that. That's what you're saying.
Yeah, yeah. That okay. Depends finally on okay. The profitability, how it is. But yeah, we have 23 crore available to be utilized in future years.
Understood. And maybe if you could just tell us the non-fund limits, right? Have your drawable limits and sanction limits changed?
Yeah, so as of now, we have a total limit of non-fund base limit of around 4,500 crore, as against the appraised limit of that's very high, around 10,000 crore. And we are also, because now business is improving and margins are better, we are in constant touch with our lenders as well as some new banks to get sanction of some additional non-fund based limits to help the operations.
Is there a timeline of when that will materialize?
So it will be gradual. We expect something to materialize in this month itself, basically in May, and in first quarter some more limits might come. We are also expecting
so
some
from the 2000. If that happens, will you be able to execute around 2500 crores a quarter sustainably in this
so
month?
That will have multiple factor. Will execution will be through non-fund based limits as well as the open credit which we get from the vendors. So depending on the execution speed and other factors, we can do the execution. So non-fund based limits is one of the factors. That will also help in getting new contracts. Basically, our non-fund based limit is generally interchangeable between LC and bank guarantee. So we can use UDGC wherever it is required to get new projects and offer the bank guarantee for them, or to give LC to our vendors and get more supplies.
Maybe let me, I'm sorry, I know it's a follow-up, but maybe let me just ask this another way, right? So assuming we get the non-fund limits through, does this mean Q1, Q2, you can exceed your Q4 run rate, or will it be muted compared to that?
So last quarter, if you see, we have executed more than 2,500 crore. It means we can execute even with the current limit 2,500 crore if other factors are favorable to the company.
Okay, sir. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Kunal Shah from DAM Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi sir. So couple of questions. Now, the first bit, as the base has been like reset for the company, you know, for F25, how are we expecting the order inflow and revenues for F26 in a base case scenario? Any revision or changes to the previous guidance?
Yeah, so as you are aware that the renewable industries depends on a host of factors, and while the quarter one, quarter two pipeline seems to be visible, the clear visibility for Q3 and Q4 project by projects is still to be worked out. While you can clearly see from the national growth plan perspective, I mean the overall opportunities in FY 2025-26 will be better than the last fiscal, and therefore, I mean, based on our trend abilities, and we now expanding into the wind and the solars, we clearly can foresee that, I mean, our order book positions will be better than this fiscal.
Okay, understood. Just thinking it a bit differently, let's say we close with a 9,000 crore order book. Now, out of this 9,000 crores, how much will get reflected in the F26 as revenues based on timelines?
We can overall say that we'll be exceeding this year's revenue target by 15-20% from the UAV that we have on 1st of April, and the new orders will be coming. This is primarily because of many factors that is impacting the project commissioning and other things. But the growth prospects seems to be definitely better than this year's. I'll say the growth would be something better than, I mean, in the range of 15 to 20%.
Yeah.
So F26 over 25 should be 15 to 20% revenue growth, essentially.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, secondly, you mentioned on the fund and non-fund based limits, like now just, you know, when we start the year with this 4,500 crore non-fund based limits, what is the revenue potential basis that, and, you know, some assumptions with respect to the open credit, etc. And secondly, you know, for this 15 to 20% growth in terms of revenues, what are we factoring in terms of our limits going up, basically, during the first half of F26, if any?
So as of now, the limit is sufficient to meet our target. However, the moment we'll get additional limits, our open credit might will reduce that because that's more expensive. Non-fund based limits come at a better cost, and we expect some additional limits to come in first quarter itself before June, and then maybe some more limits will be tied up in Q2. So we are speaking with the banks, existing lenders as well as the new lender, and we expect a good progress in terms of getting new non-fund based limits. Fund based limits we don't require, in fact we don't get drawing power also because we are negative working capital, so we'll require only for non-fund based limits for our business growth.
Understood. And is there any assumption of the open credit business that you'll be doing for F26? And what was it during F25? If you could just help with that.
It's a mix of both, basically. Sometimes like LCs, sometimes we give for 3 years, but we'll get it paid in one month. So we keep a judicial mix of both open credit as well as the limits available. There's not a specific percentage that this much will be open credit, this much will be under non-fund based limits. It depends on the availability basically. And non-fund based limits also, because it is interchangeable with bank guarantee and LC, so we use wherever it is required most for the growth. If you require more towards new business, we give bank guarantee instead of LC, using LC to vendors, and we get support from vendors to get the open credit.
And that also depends on the project timeline, etc., right?
Got it. And just lastly, there appears to be this constant volatility in the O&M gross margin business. You know, like until last quarter, we thought, you know, we are nearing that 25% or steady state, but now, you know, there's some bit of dip this quarter again. Is there one-off over here?
This is one-off for the quarter, but this O&M business, you have to see holistically for full year. For full year, we can safely assume, this year we've done around 20% gross margin in O&M business. Safely we can presume that we'll be in 20-25% range in terms of O&M margin. This year there were certain one-off expenses which we booked in last quarter. That's why quarterly O&M margin is low, but full year it is 20%.
Understood. Yeah, thanks. That's it for my side.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Sagar Parekh from OneUp Financial Consultants. Please go ahead. Hello, Mr. Sagar, your line has been unmuted. Please go ahead with your question. As there's no response, we'll move on to the next question. It's from the line of Puneet from HSBC. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you so much. Just a follow-up on this, if you can elaborate on what kind of, you know, one-off expenses do you have to book in the O&M which led to the fall in margins here?
So there are certain provisions and one-off LD in one of the project. Yeah, one certain provisions in terms of in our receivables, that's what we booked in FY24 in Q4, and there was some LD also which was booked in quarter four. That has resulted in reduced margin for O&M.
Okay, so that's right. So, but you're saying 22 is to 25 is the normalized margins one should run within O&M part of the portfolio.
Correct.
Secondly, if you can also talk a bit about any additional work that you're seeing from Reliance Industries.
Yeah, so I mean, last time also we discussed, and all of you are aware that we are doing their pilot project. So for the portion of the project that were allotted to us, that is almost completed under commissioning. A few of them have been commissioned. New parcel of land has been given to us for say around 9 megawatt, which is under construction now. So that's the basically, you know, the pilot project. On the bigger size utility scale projects, we have submitted our offers, and they are under different stage of, you know, the plannings and the, trying to understand that when the project can be launched and all. But from our side, we have already submitted the offers. So this is in the progress, you can say.
Okay, and is there an understanding that the project will come to you, or can it go to the other vendors as well?
Last time also I told you, this can go to other vendors, this can come to us because the kind of pipeline they are discussing about. So, I mean, no such vendors in the country has that kind of capacity to, I mean, claim that he will be the only sole vendor. No, it's not possible. So, they can decide based on the merits, and we believe that we are, I mean, very strong on our merit, and therefore we'll get the major portion of the orders should be coming to us. That's what I can tell you at this stage.
And just to add what CK said, the revenue guidance what we have given or we are giving, it is excluding Reliance and excluding Nigeria.
Correct.
Without these two.
And lastly, on the battery front, there have been a lot of new battery bids coming in at very low tariffs. Are you seeing the benefit of that both in terms of newer orders and also lower cost on the battery prices for projects which you are executing?
So basically, the development of the projects that have been bidded out, right, around 9 gigawatt kind of projects have been allocated, right, the various IPPs. But only few of them have taken off. It is true that the battery, lithium ion battery prices have gone really historically down, and that's the reason that the government of India and the other, in fact in the other globes also, people are trying to move from intermittency to the fixed power kind of things. So either through the solar battery or through only this as an obligation in the existing solar plant or the other establishments or through maybe the solar, wind and battery. So market tractions will happen in this, I mean, through these segments, that is for sure. And if you see the tariff, the fixed tariff on the basically round-the-clock power tariff, if I say, so that is comparable to better than the fossil plants, that's what the people are claiming. So market traction definitely will be seen in these segments.
No, what I'm trying to understand is you have, other than the BES project for JSW, which is in the limbo currently, do you have anything else which you are executing on the BESS side?
So we have executed few smaller projects for Reliance. We have executed, you know, few projects outside India. So currently, other than JSW, no. But frankly speaking, now there are few tenders which are in the bidding stage. And got the very sound experience for the best projects domestically or internationally, we believe that we should be getting few, right.
And so size of this opportunity here currently, which is available for
entering? Currently, the bids which are out under process, they are around 100 megawatt hour to 300 megawatt hour kind of things, few projects. But I mean, like NTPC is talking about 10 gigawatt hour of, you know, the pipeline in next few years. So everybody is trying to understand that how it's going to impact the market, what kind of, you know, the pricing would be there, so all those things. But since this obligation of 10% storage has come along with the solar plant, the market will definitely see the traction.
Understood. And lastly, one clarification, the JSW order is a part of your order book or is it still an MOU?
It's a part of our order.
Okay, and what is the value of that?
It is around, I think, 234 crores. Around 250 crores. I don't remember the exact number, but it is, I mean, around 250 crores.
Understood. That's very helpful. Thank you so much and all the best.
Thank you.
Thank you. I would request all the investors to please limit their questions to two per participant, as there are several people waiting for their turn. The next question is from the line of Nirav Vasa from ASK Investment Managers. Please go ahead.
Hello and good morning, sir. So my question pertains to the non-signing of PPA. The quantity of projects for which the PPAs have not been signed is quite huge. So wanted to understand your perspective. According to your understanding, why are the PPAs not being signed? And the second part of my question is like, how strong is the transmission and evacuation capacity in the country? The pace at which we are increasing the renewable capacity is the transmission and evacuation capacity is working in the with the same length? These are the two questions that I have. Thank you.
So basically, this question does not pertain to EPC company, right? Because EPC business comes only when the projects are basically in the market. So you are right. So, but as your overall business macro level, if you analyze, then signing of PPA, which is tariff adoption, and the connectivity issues. So those are two areas which have been, primarily from last couple of quarters, if you see, those who have been impacting the expeditious development of the project. So why it is happening is maybe basically because of, you know, it's not our, the area to answer this question, but just for the micro perspective, I can answer you. That's basically the tariff adoption takes place in the state government, right? So it is for them to adopt the tariff. And some of the states, they feel that, because of the declining price and all, it's becoming difficult for them to adopt that. So this, they're taking a little, longer time. But the government of India has been harping on every state government to expeditiously sign and adopt all the tariffs, right? So that is one area. On the development of the transmission systems, so there is a committee set up, nodal committee and all. So they are trying to see that to ensure the grid stability is how the green corridors can be maintained, and huge investments are there. All those the pipelines, the projects are under the advanced stage of construction and all. It will take some time, but temporarily, you are right that there is a jerk on the development of the PPAs that that are stuck up because of either the tariff reductions or some of the projects because of the transmission line. But otherwise, the target that we have been, if you see that this year target, the target was a little more than what the, as a country level, the people have achieved. Otherwise, the solar capacity of could have easily gone beyond 24 gigawatt that has been achieved this year. So those are the micro things that are impacting the business development. But it's okay. Other than that, also there are enough, the business pipeline that is being seen.
Sir, but on one side, around 40 gigawatt of capacity doesn't have PPA. 26 gigawatt is what we add up in a year. Maximum 30-35 gigawatt of solar capacity can be added in a year, as per my assessment. So effectively, we have practically 1 year's capacity, which is for which PPAs have not been signed. So according in the light of this scenario, what are the chances that the impact of this can come on the entire ecosystem, including EPC contractors? Any delays in projects? Any changes in terms? How do you see that?
Well, the number of projects that we have in hand, they are not impacted, right, the UOV. The number of the projects that we are targeting in this financial years, they are also very clear. Our share, if you see, they are from IPPs and from CNI sectors. The CNI sectors are not impacted. The open access projects are obviously impacted. But then there are enough number of PPA and connectivity already signed, like NTPC and all. So they are all into solar park. So they are all, through. So government tenders are not impacted because of that. So basically, at the minor level, if you say, yes, there is jerk. The people are worried about, for sure, but then if you're on the broader levels, then company do not have any options. We have to meet the target of 300 megawatt by 2030. That calls for around 50 gigawatt of bidding every year and execution of say 35 to 40 gigawatt, right? So even if there is a shortfall, there would be enough space for us to play, right? So that's the basically point.
Thank you.
Even if there is shortfall, there will be shortfall, but then we have enough space to play.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Purva Javeri from One Up Financial Consultant. Please go ahead.
Hello. Hello.
Yes,
sir. Yeah, hello. I'm audible, right? So I wanted to ask, how much of the order book is in Khavda? And what is the risk to the project execution if there is India-Pakistan war?
India, Pakistan is a very
highly speculative,
very interesting question. In fact, I think it's not proper logical to discuss this question in this call, right? I mean, I'll skip this question. I'm sorry. Yeah.
But at least, can you say how much is the order concentration in the Khavda order book concentration?
Order book concentration is around 4 plus gigawatt in Khavda, and they are at different stages of the project. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, mostly completed, correct.
Our project is mostly completed in Khavda, so we are in advanced stage of execution.
All right, thank you.
Thank you. Participants are requested to limit your questions to one per participant. The next question is from the line of Subhash B. from Value Investments. Please go ahead.
Hello, am I audible?
Yeah, yeah, I can hear you. Please go ahead.
Okay, so my first question was about the wind EPC order that you have got, the hybrid order. So I think 3 quarters ago I attended your con call and I asked you a question whether you would be interested in wind EPC sector as well, but you clearly said that you are concentrating only on solar EPC and not on wind EPC. So what changed this decision for you to take the hybrid order? And also, I think the wind EPC has lesser margins than solar, right? So do you still stick with the same margin guidance of 10% or the little bit lower if you win more wind EPC orders?
No, so if you can recall, if you would have discussed this point, so risk in the wind is basically for the wind turbine side, right? So land related risk, access risk, and the performance of the wind turbine. Our strategy for wind business is very clear. We are not going for procurement of the wind turbine or doing the land access or the land these things, right? And it's only BOS that we are, concentrating on. And this order is also for the BOS. So this is ample space. Even if the wind as business overall growth is, huge traction, the BOS part, which could be around 30-40%, is also a good space for us. So there is no risk on that such. So that gives our USP to basically provide a holistic solution to our customers.
So are the margins similar to our EPC or does it change there? Does it reduce?
Margin in the BOS is the similar job, no? So solar BOS or the wind BOS, the equipment remaining same, the business remaining same, the margin remaining same.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Mohit Kumar from ICICI Securities. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning, sir, and thanks for the opportunity. My question is on the, what is the progress on NTPC execution and how much of the order is still to be executed? And have you commissioned the Khavda 3 gigawatt in this quarter?
This quarter means you said before June, right?
Yeah.
Before June, are you expecting to commission in this particular Q1 FY26?
No, so out of the total 3 gigawatt, yes, you are right, so slightly over 3 gigawatt. So around 2 gigawatt for sure it will be commissioned, and another 1.2 gigawatt. They are at various stages, but then we are still expecting modules to be supplied by them, right? So if they are able to supply the modules in next couple of weeks, this can be seen, right? The commissioning is possible before June. Otherwise, this may spill over. But it is not because of, it's not basically because of our side. Our side, we are almost, you can say, we are in advanced stage of, installation of other things. Some of the interrelated work which can happen only after module is installed, that is only left out, like some cable connections and all those stuff kind of things. So we are expecting the modules to be supplied soon so that we can finish the project. But from our side, so all civil works, everything to that extent is complete.
Just to clarify, talking about 1.2 gigawatt commissioning in Q1 FY26 and the balance later. Is that right?
So I say that over 2 gigawatt will be commissioned before June, and 1.2 can spill over.
Understood, sir. My second question, if I may ask, how is the opportunity looking in the Middle East? Of course, given that we understand that the opportunity is very high, do we have the appetite to participate in the region again, or can you just please throw some light?
We are just evaluating this Middle East market, so I mean, no doubt there is a huge opportunity. The project size is also is a huge project size. They are coming up, particularly in Saudi and the Middle East, right? Abu Dhabi and Dubai and all those such places. Two regions that we are now keeping up away from this market is that the tier one EPC players have got into this market, and they are operating at a very lower margin. That is not our appetite. Number one. Number two, the terms and conditions of the contracts, they are not conducive. So it's basically lenders driven market, right? So very stringent terms and conditions in terms of penalties acceptance or in terms of the BG requirement and all. Therefore, we are just watching that market to get corrections, and then as far as experience is concerned, we have huge experience. We were the first to get the largest size of project in Suhan. You know, you are aware, around over 1,000 megawatt capacity. And so we have the office, we have our team, but right now we are not bullish in this Middle East market.
Understood, sir. Thank you, and all the best, sir. Thank you.
The next question is from the line of Rishikesh from Robo Capital. Please go ahead.
Hello. Am I audible?
Yes, we can hear you.
Yeah, thank you for the opportunity. So my first question is, if you could guide you, what should be our interest expense for FY26 and...
So if you see current year, this has ranged between 1.2% to 1.7% of revenue, and we believe that will be in the same range for next quarter, next year also. The interest expense is what you see in the balance sheet is not exactly only on the debt. There are certain other interest also, which includes interest on advances, interest on LC discounting, and some bank charges, vendor financing. So all those interests are there. So interest costs you cannot per se link with the debt outstanding. Interest has a lot of other components also, as I mentioned. And overall okay. Guidance will be same range, 1.2% to 1.7%.
Okay. Secondly, on Nigeria, could you update exactly what is the status there and by when can we see the agreement to happen?
So I just explained sometime before, I'm not sure whether you were there. I mean, it's a very, I mean, clearly spelled out that, I mean, these things are getting delayed procedurally. It may take some time, right? But the project is on. It's difficult okay. to say that when to sign up the contracts, but I mean, it will take 6 to 9 months after signing the contract for the financial closure and then to get the NTP.
Thank you. Sorry to interrupt. I would request please come back in the queue for further questions. The next question is from the line of Bhavik Shah from MK Ventures. Please go ahead.
I'm audible?
Yes, we can hear you.
Yes, sir, a few questions. So first is, what will be your order in FY26, X of Reliance? And so how much time does it take for an order like Reliance to achieve financial closure once we get the order? And the third is, what is the receipt of indemnity we are aiming in FY26? And my last question is, why is the other income negative?
No, so I'll answer for the first question first, and then Ajit will take up for the another two questions. So financial closure is not something which pertains to me. So it's basically Reliance, once the project is concluded, is the EPC order that we will go for. And I don't think that's the basically hindrance for Reliance projects to come up, right?
So can you start with the project?
Come back again, please.
So you'll be able to start with the project immediately as we get the project?
For us, yes. So the moment the project is awarded to us, we are within the, as per the project timelines, we can start doing the work.
Okay. Yeah. And so the other question?
Ajit. Another two questions for you.
Sorry, can you repeat if you don't mind?
Yeah. So what will be your order inflow for FY26 excluding Reliance? how much receipt of indemnity we will get in FY26, and what will, why is the other income negative?
So as we indicated, FY26 we are looking for a growth of around 15-20% in terms of overall order intake. And indemnity
as revenue, that was for revenue, not order intake.
Order intake also same growth we are looking at.
Okay.
Around 15%. In terms of indemnity, nothing has been crystallized.
Okay.
And yeah, so crystallized indemnity is not there, but around 850 crore we can expect to receive. That has been intimated to the promoters, and that should be due in September.
No, so that will be this. I mean, they are. I mean, this is the outflow from the project.
850 crore is the current outflow from the project.
Basically, so I mean, the number that you see, that 850 crores is the outflow from the project, which is at the various levels of, you know, the litigations, understanding and all those. Once crystallized, so if, I mean, our expectation from the client is 850 crores. So if out of 850 crores, if something is falling short of, that will go to indemnity. And once it is, the order comes in our favor, it will go to the project company.
I'm
sorry to interrupt, Mr. Bhavik. Please come back in the queue for further questions. The next question is from the line of Faisal Hawa from HGN Hawa and Company. Please go ahead.
And yeah, one more question was there. Let me respond. Other income is negative because of the forex loss that got configured over there. Forex loss has been adjusted against other income. That's why it came negative for the quarter. Not for the full year. For the quarter, it is negative. For the full year, if you see, it's a positive 39.6 crore, the income positive.
Hello. Please go ahead.
Yeah, is it clear?
Yes, sir. Mr. Faisal, please go ahead with your question.
Sir, what is the kind of reduction we are expecting from our fixed costs, like our central office expenses? In lieu of so much competition coming on from other players in EPC, is there any chance that these expenses could be cut down so that we are much more competitive for newer orders?
We will work on that, but as of now, we will not indicate any reduction. We will continue with the same trend what we had in the last year.
And sir, are there any international orders that we are bidding for also, and what is the size of those orders that we have already bid, and have you budgeted for any wins there?
Yeah, so as I have told you that, I mean, our focus is more in the domestic market. International market, we are very select in a very select geography. And only those orders we are targeting which are very conducive to our requirement. Right? So good terms and conditions, better payment terms, not much risk. So having burnt our finger in past, so we are very careful. So, if you see the last year, the order inflow, it was over 1,000 crores. Before that also, it was over 1,000 crores. So, we are targeting in the range of, you know, 1,000 to 2,000 crores orders if it keeps on coming from Africa and European market. European market means we say that the Iberia, Balkans regions where not many players are there, and then you can still command some better margins. So, only those regions we are targeting.
And are we, after appointing the new CFO, are we also trying to plug in positions from people who have resigned in the last 6 to 7 months, or we will let those posts be vacant mostly, or just promote from the organization upwards?
So I'm reviewing the entire org chart, and there would be some new recruitments also in certain key positions. And whatever we can manage with the existing resource, we'll continue to manage it.
And is there a chance that Reliance...
Well, just to supplement Mr. Ajit's answer, you know, so basically the organization is not starved off, you know, so few people leaving us here and there does not impact the business, day-to-day business, right? But always as you grow in the business size, there would be always requirement to see that if the fresh blood is required or so, something like this. But There has not been a mass exodus kind of situation, and that's not really alarming us, very frankly speaking, yeah.
And is there a chance that we could get some large orders from Reliance in the first half itself, because we have done the first pilot for them?
No, so we've done the first 5 years. A few projects are under bidding stage. It's difficult for us to assess at this stage that it will come in first quarter or second quarter. But yes, the team is working from their side, from our side. We are engaged gainfully and we are working on this.
Thanks for answering my question so well, sir.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, that was the last question for today's conference call. With that, we conclude today's conference call. On behalf of Sterling and Wilson Renewable Energy Limited, that concludes this conference. We thank you for joining us and you may now disconnect your lines. Thank you.